welcome to Smart Mouth. I am your host, Catherine Spires, and this week I am very excited that we are going to be talking about Xiaolong Bao, which you may also know as XLB, or maybe you know them as soupy dumplings. We have to discuss all the different names for them. And our guest this week is Anthony Kailan. Hi.
Hello. How's it going?
Good. How are you?
I'm so stoked to be here.
Yes. I love it when guests are stoked to be here.
Talking about my favorite food.
Is it your favorite?
It is one of my favorite foods on the face of the earth, because it's just like pasta, soup, and meatball all in one bite, and amazing.
Yeah, I never thought about it that way, but you're totally right.
It's all the flavors.
It is. It's so good. Before we talk about them, I want to talk about your job title because it sounds so fancy. U.S. Ambassador for Bordeaux Wines.
Yeah, it's true.
So the entire region, which might be one of the most famous in France. I mean, there's Champagne.
Champagne, Burgundy, Bordeaux. Bordeaux is very famous, but there's been a little bit of a reputation issue of it being like just super fancy and super fun, only for the wealthy. My goal is to change that and make people realize that Bordeaux can be for everybody.
Yeah.
There's Bordeaux for all price points. You don't have to drink old Bordeaux to have it be good. Just drink it all.
Okay.
Yeah.
I mean, I can see why they hired you to do that. You're young. You seem hip. They want to be like, hey, this guy drinks it,
I'm young,
so can you.
I'm a person of color. I'm real hip right now.
That's so awesome. Congratulations
Thank you.
Your hipness. So you are employed by France.
Yes, the CIVB, or the it's the Bordeaux Wine Council.
That's so cool. And you just go around and you're like, hey, Bordeaux wine, check it out,
pretty
guys.
Much.
Well, that seems like a fun job.
It is fun. I get to drink tasty wine and get to share tasty wine with people. I should have brought a bottle. Damn it.
Yeah, you should have. Jacques Pepin did. So
what?
I guess he's still number one guest.
Well, that makes perfect sense.
I know. He's such a classy
guy. He's just so classy. I mean, he used to hang out with Julia Child.
Yeah. Bunch of classy people all hanging out together.
Exactly.
The only beer I could have offered you anyway was Budweiser. So you know what you're getting into.
Out of bottle or out of can?
Out of a can.
That's fine.
All right, so let's talk about the subject at hand, because I feel like people who know about Xiaolong Bao really know about it, because to have it is to love it, is my opinion.
I agree. It becomes like an obsessive thing. I mean, I was, when I first tasted it, I was maybe like 13, 12 years old, and my parents just moved us into the San Gabriel Valley, and well, what we love to eat out would be like just food that's $5, $6, $7 a plate, and that's exactly what it is in the SGV. There's so much tasty, affordable food. And then when I first tasted the Xiaolong Bao at Din Tai Fung, because all of your friends like, go to Din Tai Fung, go to Din Tai Fung. So you finally go, you're like, I get it. I understand now.
Yeah.
This makes perfect sense.
Yeah. It's amazing. You have to be careful eating it. Let's go over what it is. It is a dumpling. And the words Xiaolong Bao means little basket bun. And most people think that it originated in Shanghai, and it has pork and soup in it. The soup, of course, being gelatin, pork gelatin, that when you steam it, it liquefies. And then it also has, what else goes in it? Sesame and ginger.
Sesame, ginger, sometimes crab.
Yes.
Yeah.
Now, I actually prefer the plain pork ones to the crab and pork.
I like the crab and pork.
Really?
Yeah, I like a little fishy.
Quality. Okay.
But then I also grew up with fish sauce, so that makes perfect sense, I think.
Sure. And my favorite part, I mean, yeah, Xiaolong Bao is amazing, but that black vinegar.
Oh.
The traditional dipping sauce.
And ginger. And it just makes it everything.
Yeah. Yeah. It's, so I feel like, okay, Matilda is panting. She likes them too. I don't know if the mic is picking up, but she's... Michelle says it is. That's how you guys will feel about Xiaolong Bao when you first have them, too. So it is kind of magical, because the first time you have it, you're like, wait a minute, it's liquid inside. And if you don't know about the gelatin thing, you're like, what happened?
It's either going to be a joyful experience or incredibly painful.
You have to be so careful, right?
It's like that little tiny bite, get the soup out, and then that's how I eat it. I take a little bite, and then pour the soup out into the spoon and drink that.
Oh, so you actually pour it out.
Yeah.
I put it in the spoon with the chopsticks. I bite off just a little bit of the top, let it air out, and then one mouthful of the whole thing.
Mad respect. I like to do it like if it's like 10 minutes chilling on there, then I just pop them in.
Yeah.
But I don't have the patience to do that. So.
I mean, yeah, for everybody listening at home, we really cannot overemphasize how careful you have to be.
It's true.
With these deadly delicious little bites.
They're fire. It hurts.
So hot.
There's this place in New York called Joe Shanghai.
Yes.
And I used to go there all the time when I was in culinary school. I used to, like, literally take the train down from Poughkeepsie and go into New York City and go get these dumplings with my friends. And on the wall, as you're waiting in line, there's this huge thing that's like, seriously, be careful. This shit's really hot. And there's like this directions on how to eat it. And I was like, oh, well, that's useful.
Yeah.
A friend of mine did not read that and popped it in her mouth. And like, those dumplings are like the juiciest that I've ever had.
Yeah.
And she just burned like the entire roof of her mouth.
Oh my God. Poor baby.
Poor girl. Yeah. But it's okay. She's killing it now. So it's fine.
Oh, good. She recovered. Yeah. She has a career now and everything.
She has a career. She's a little chocolate shop in Mexico City. She's killing it.
Oh, great. Good, 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 good. So there is a particular legend about how they were invented, and it might be an oversimplification because usually, not usually, but sometimes like in a community, more than one person is making the same thing.
Yeah.
Because you have like similar ingredients. Yeah. Everyone has access to the same ingredients, that sort of thing. But the idea is that in the 1870s, this one guy who lived in Nansheng, which is a district in Shanghai, he was the first to add aspic to his chopped up pork in the dumpling.
Jeez.
Yes, he was the first one with that idea. And then he decided to make it even more specific. Each dumpling had to have 14 pleats in it. If it didn't have that top fold 14 times for each one, then it was no good.
Fascinating.
So specific and uptight.
I did not know that.
Right? And he actually was calling them something else. Nansheng Da Romantu. I obviously have no idea how to pronounce it, but it meant large meat-filled bun from Nansheng.
Ooh.
The district. So it became super popular, as we can understand, because I think at any point in history, this particular combo is delicious. But people were – the name changed – into the Shao and the Long, the small and the basket. Mm. So small basket dumplings.
Beautiful.
Yeah.
I did not know that.
It's such a...
That's so cool.
Right? Yeah.
It's like this stories. Thing you've been eating for so long. Mm-hmm. And then all of a sudden it's like, oh, there's history behind this. Well, this is very cool.
That's what I'm hoping all our listeners think too. Hey, neat.
This is awesome.
So, but the thing is, like, if you look at things like TripAdvisor or recipe blogs or something like that, people will get in fights. I noticed this doing my research. People will get in fights about what Xiaolongbao actually means. Or they'll say stuff like, especially on like the travel blogs, like, oh, but I went to this one restaurant in a different part of China outside of Shanghai and we ordered the Xiaolongbao and got something totally different. So I guess the names kind of change regionally.
Fascinating. That makes perfect sense, though.
I mean, China is huge.
Massive. 2 billion people.
Right. And geographically enormous, yeah. too. So it makes sense that, like, things, the names would change. It's kind of like how in America, there's some areas where if you order a milkshake, you'll be like, what?
Or when people call it soda or pop.
Yes.
Pop, that's weird.
Is it weird to you?
I think so. I mean, I feel like that's very Midwest.
It's Midwest and north all the way to the ocean.
Okay.
Because I grew up in Seattle and I definitely called it pop.
Ah, fascinating.
Mm-hmm. And I don't know when I switched over to soda.
Probably here.
Well, for sure. But I don't like remember there being a moment where I'm like, I'm a Californian now. I say soda.
So when you say dude and like every other word.
Yeah.
I'm guilty of saying like all the time.
Oh, for sure.
I don't even realize it, but I do it all the time.
Mm-mm. Yeah. Yeah. Of course. We don't know how we talk. I a little bit do because I have to listen to myself every week. And it's horrifying. And now, okay, I just one last little point. Mm-hmm. Now pop seems like the silliest word to me.
Pop.
Yeah. It seems so juvenile.
Yeah.
Can I get a pop?
Sounds like a little kid.
Right.
Yeah. Like a 1950s child, like caricature.
Yes.
Hey there, Shaw. Can I get a pop, please?
But I wonder how long it would take me if I moved back to Seattle to just start saying pop again and not even realize it.
I don't know.
Silly little
probably
world.
Probably instantaneous.
You think?
Yeah.
Yeah, because I mean, it's in my blood.
Because it's like when you hang out with certain people, it's like you end up becoming that person that you are with that person.
Yeah.
So when I hang out with people I went to high school with, I become like way more childish. And when I'm hanging out with all of my wine friends, I become, well, also childish, but drunk.
Drunk childish.
All the time.
Right. Right. Tell me more about that, because I think people do still have this idea that wine is classier mm-hmm. than other boozes. But I've seen your Instagram. You guys get lit.
We get very drunk all the time. Well, the thing is, I mean, wine, especially in LA for some reason, I don't know why. There's like this stereotype of, oh, you're the wine drinker. You're like a fancy. You think you're better than me. Like, I don't understand. Like, no. It's like, mainly because in LA, this is a cocktail town. This has always been a cocktail town.
Okay.
Since like the early days of Hollywood, like martinis and martinis and martinis and martinis. It's like, that's it. Uh-huh. Right? Now it's become like wine is having this movement. I mean, throughout the world at this moment, natural wine. Mm-hmm. And for me, I'm kind of just like, wine's just fun. Like, who cares? Don't call it whatever you want. But good wine is good wine. You can find good wine for $15 to $20. Mm-hmm. You can find good wine for lots and lots of money. But you can just have wine all the time, every day.
Have you liked wine since the first time you tried it? Or was it an acquired taste for you? Yes.
I liked it because it was easy to drink. And I had some friends that were like, oh, look at me drink this IPA. And like, I don't like that.
Uh-huh.
I don't get it. It's really bitter.
Yeah.
This is not pleasurable.
Yeah.
But wine, it's like, oh, grape juice. Yeah, okay. This makes easy. It's like Welch's with alcohol. And I'm like, yeah, this is fantastic. Like the big jug wines, like Carlo Rossi Sangria.
Uh-huh.
I was 16 and I was drinking that. And I was like, this is great.
Okay.
I get it.
I really, really hope that when you're in restaurants serving people, you're like, it's like Welch's, but with alcohol. La madame.
That's exactly how I am.
No wonder you're so good at your job. So approachable. Because,
I mean, it's like, look, people are intimidated by wine.
Mm-hmm.
And I refuse to scare people because when you're in a restaurant, it's like there's so many things that are going through your mind. You're trying to impress a date. You're trying to make sure your family's doing okay.
Mm-hmm.
But when you're in there, you just want to get a drink. Wine is just an alcoholic beverage.
Yeah.
I mean, my job, if I'm working in a restaurant in the moment, my job is to provide a person with alcohol. Mm. And something that I believe tastes good with the food
mm-hmm.
and something that I think is made well and represents what I believe in mm-hmm. wine. And that's it. It's very simple. It's like, hey, welcome. Would you like something white and refreshing, red and refreshing? Anything? I got you.
Do you ever make stuff up in the moment?
No. I try not to, because that's when people are kind of like, wine people are all full of shit. I'm like, yes and no. It's because, if you're trying to romanticize wine, it's like, yes, this is like velvety and delicious, mm-hmm. and you have to make it sound real sexy.
Mm-hmm.
But there's people who just like, is it good? Yeah, cool. I'll take that. Okay. Is it $40 or is it $50? Is it $60? It's $40. Great. I'll take that. It's fine.
Okay. Because I imagine if you wanted to, there's a lot of people who don't know about wine mm-hmm. and are intimidated about that. And you could really, like, do a little upsell here and there by just using a lot of, like, ridiculous wine yes. terms.
But for me, I mean, I ask people what the price point is, what they're looking for.
Okay.
So, I mean, I try to get the money thing out of the way first. And mm-hmm. then I'm kind of like, all right, let's reach into this realm of wine. That is in the $40 price point or in the $30 price point or in the – well, there's very few wines in the $30 price point in restaurants. But $40, $50, $60, there's like plenty.
Uh-huh.
Or there should be.
Uh-huh.
And I just tell them, this is what I think is delicious, especially with what you're ordering. You're eating some tinned fish, mm-hmm. then you should drink some bubbles.
Mm.
Call it a day. Enjoy yourself. Or some light chilled red.
Uh-huh.
Drink the whole thing. It's low in alcohol. You'll be fine.
So – you've been a sommelier before, correct? Mm-hmm. And when you're working at a restaurant as a sommelier, have you tried every dish on the menu?
Yeah, you have to.
So that's part of when they employ you, they're like, sit down and eat this?
Yeah. It's usually just like with the staff training, it's like everyone gets like one bite of
okay.
dish. Yeah. That'd be cool though to like just sit there and just get like every dish full courses.
Right.
That would be amazing.
Have it be like a 3-week training process of just eating
exactly.
everything.
I'd gain like 30 pounds.
Right.
Yeah.
Do you take notes after you've tried a bite?
I've never been a note taker, mm-hmm. like even in school, like I hated taking notes.
Mm-hmm.
And so I just like try to, if I'm really interested in something, I don't need to take notes. I just.
You retain it.
Yeah. If I'm seeing it. But for the most part, I don't take notes.
Do some people take notes? Like, is that a thing?
Absolutely.
Tasting notes that you remember?
A lot of people take a lot of notes. Like my mentors in the past, like they have like stacks and stacks of notebooks of their notes from the past. And I'm kind of just like, that's not how I roll.
Mm-hmm. Just remembering what's on the menu.
I remember the label. I remember how it tastes. And then I take a picture and I'm like, that's it.
Okay.
I've always been a visual person.
Okay.
So it's like, as much as I do read, uh-huh. I do read, but I do retain images better than I do words.
Fair enough.
Yeah.
And are you the ultimate level sommelier? I've seen some, but I forget what all the levels are.
I'm none of those.
Okay, so you didn't do any of the uptight tests?
Yeah.
You refuse.
It's not for me.
Tell me more.
It's not for me. So the Court of Master Sommeliers is like a very like intense institution and like very like way more serious about wine than myself. Like,
okay.
I find wine to just be a fun thing for everyone.
Mm-hmm.
And this is not all people who take the Court of Master Somm exams. But sometimes I feel like it's a little bit too putting the wine on the pedestal.
Mm.
And that's not me.
Mm-hmm.
It's like, drink this, put it in your mouth, it's delicious.
Okay.
And call it a day.
Okay.
Yeah.
So you don't think you'll ever do that as like a Mm-mm. test to yourself or anything?
Nope.
Okay.
That's not my thing.
I actually really respect that. Because having seen Somm, it almost seems like once if you're going through the sommelier certification, you maybe lose some of the enjoyment of wine.
Yeah. I mean, there's that one scene with the blonde guy. And he was just like, once this is over, I'm going to go to Mexico and I'm going to just drink like a ton of beer. And he had this like look of like just sadness in his face. And I was like, I don't want to have that feeling ever.
Yeah. It's yeah, absolutely. I mean, with their flashcards and yeah. the memorizing regions.
See, like
and
again,
all
like I hate that stuff. Like fun. Keep it fun.
Yeah.
Keep it light.
Yeah. That makes a lot of sense. Do you ever not drink wine at dinner? I mean, do you drink other alcohols?
Yeah. Drink lots of beer.
Okay.
Especially if you're like pizza and beer. Like there is a lot of good pizza wine.
Uh-huh.
But let's be real though. It's like you just bought a $15 pie or a $20 pie. It's like I just want like some shitty cheap beer.
I like the idea of pizza wine.
Yeah.
You should start an Instagram about pizza wine.
Hashtag pizza wine.
And it should mostly be Domino's.
Should I do a partnership with Domino's?
Yes. You're a sommelier of the people, right? Is it okay to call you a sommelier? I mean, when you're working at a restaurant, that's like your name on the restaurant's website, right?
Wine sommelier or wine director.
Okay.
I just call myself a wine dude.
Hey, are you from California?
I'm very much from here.
So you earlier mentioned the restaurant Din Tai Fung.
Mm-hmm.
And I think everyone can agree that they're the restaurant that really popularized Xiaolongbao
throughout the world.
Yeah,
yeah.
Yeah, absolutely. I think without them, it wouldn't be the thing that it is right now.
There would not be the madness without Din Tai Fung.
Yeah.
Yeah.
And it's not even just a regional thing because they're in a lot of countries now, mm-hmm. a lot of continents.
Yeah.
And everywhere that they open, there's always a line for like the first year that it's open, mm-hmm. at least, and like a long line. And it's ridiculous. I will say that I do think there might be a couple places in Los Angeles that make better Xiaolongbao than Din Tai Fung does.
I think that's totally fair.
Okay.
I mean, you know, it's like you need one to have like a kind of like understanding of where everything comes from. And then there will always be others that just make it better.
They're kind of like the baseline.
Yeah.
I'm going to say something. And I don't mean it the way that it's going to sound. It's kind of like Din Tai Fung is the Krispy Kreme of Xiaolongbao.
Yeah.
I think that they're, I mean, it's comparing donuts and dumplings, but I think that they're much better, quote unquote, better than Krispy Kreme maybe is. But it's like you have this and you're like, oh, I get it. I get what this is supposed to be.
Exactly. Like Stone IPA to the craft beer movement.
Sure.
It's like without Stone, that wouldn't have been like that big push.
Yeah, you got to get the baseline
exactly
in there. But Din Tai Fung is really good.
It's still delicious.
Yeah.
I love that place so much.
Yeah, for sure. So even though Xiaolongbao is considered to be a Shanghai dish, Din Tai Fung is from Taiwan.
Mm-hmm.
And so the story of Din Tai Fung is kind of the story of Chinese migration to Taiwan.
That makes perfect sense.
Yeah. So Taiwan has like a long history of people having always been there. And there's ethnic links to like Polynesians and all basically, you know, all around the Pacific Rim, which is how we do in this part of the world.
Yeah. Just huge people. Melting pot.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. But then Japan came in 1895 and were real rude about everything. And really, really took over and did a lot of massacres and stuff like
Sounds
that.
Sounds about right.
Yeah, they weren't great. And then China started having its issues. The Kuomintang took over in like 1919. Sun Yat-sen organized it, and then Chiang Kai-shek organized it, and he and his wife got a lot of U.S. support. But in China, people were like, nah, we're going to be communist for a minute. And there were huge wars that like decimated China between the Nationalist Party, which was the Kuomintang, and Chiang Kai-shek, and communism, which was Mao Zedong. So in starting around 1945, when the Nationalists were clearly losing the war in China, they all booked it over to Taiwan.
Yep. That sounds about right.
Yeah, which meant that Taiwan kind of became this area with a lot of very wealthy Chinese people, because the wealthy Nationalists were the ones that had to leave. So part of what that meant is that Taiwan got a lot of really good food because all the fancy chefs moved there. Isn't that like so silly and simplistic? But it is really what happened.
I mean, it's kind of the same thing, the same story with New York and all their chefs. It's like a lot of people are kind of like, oh, this is getting ridiculous, France. It's like nothing's happening. What's going on? And then they all moved here and it's like, oh, look, Daniel Boulud or Eric Repair or...
Yeah, oh, that's interesting.
Sean George.
I never thought about it that way,
like,
but you're right.
Creative freedom.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, Taiwan must have maybe seemed like a relief in that sense.
Let's do whatever the hell you want.
Yeah. Okay. I like that. I hadn't thought about that. So there was this guy named Yang Bingyi, and he had worked for the Nationalist Party in China. So he had to come. He was only a clerk. But he moved to Taiwan in 1949, which makes me think he was like, okay, I'm going to see you guys later. I'm out. So he worked in an oil factory, and that's where he met the woman who would become his wife. He was a delivery guy for the oil company, like making wholesale deliveries, and his wife was just like working as a receptionist or something like that. The oil company that they worked for, I mean cooking oil, by the way, just FYI, that company failed, and so these two decided to take over the cooking oil store. They renamed it Din Tai Fung. And they decided that for funsies, I guess, they would also sell snacks, like, out of the storefront.
That's cool.
Mm-hmm. So they weren't professional cooks or anything. They just learned about soupy dumplings.
That's amazing.
Yeah. And that is how Din Tai Fung worldwide phenomenon started, was from a failed cooking oil company.
Amazing. Well, they were like, oil's not working, so let's steam some shit.
Right. Right. It makes a lot of sense. I wonder if they ever tried frying the soupy dumplings.
I think it's too thin, maybe.
Yes.
And they get like super soggy and unpleasant.
Yeah, because that is one of the benchmarks of Xiaolong Bao, is the very, very thin. You get that dumpling skin like as thin as possible. Do you know that there's a very, very similar dish in the country, Georgia?
No.
Yeah. It's liquid and meat on the inside, usually beef though. You can get it either steamed or fried, and it has much thicker skin on purpose. And you eat it with your hands, and you actually grab it by the top where all the pleats come together. And then you eat all the good part of the dumpling and you don't eat the top pleat part.
Huh.
That's just like its handle.
Whoa.
So it's like a much sturdier version of Xiaolong Bao.
I want to eat that.
There's one place where I found it at. It's actually at an Armenian restaurant, but they happen to serve this one Georgian specialty there. It's in Glendale. I imagine that across the United States, it's not an easy dish to find.
Yeah.
But if anyone has found it, well, I should probably say what it's actually called. It is called King Kali. I might be mispronouncing
King
it.
King Kali.
King Kali. If anyone listening has had it before, please tell us about it.
That'd be really cool.
I know. I feel like we
should
go eat
there. What's
the
place in Glendale?
It's called Tumanyan King Kali Factory.
Huh.
Which I guess they better be good at it. They name their restaurant after the dish. But see, look at that picture. See how big they are and how thick that top is?
Oh, that's super. Yeah, I can see that being just like not pleasant to eat.
Yeah, so you just grab onto it.
It's like shrimp tails.
Shrimp tails, yeah. Yeah, you don't want to eat it. Mm-hmm. I think, is that the only picture? That is the only picture. Jonathan Gold says it's good, so it must
well,
be.
Well, I believe that, man. I was actually, this one time I was listening to him on Good Food, mm-hmm. and I was driving down Las Tunas in Temple City to get my haircut, and all of a sudden he comes on, he's talking about this place on Las Tunas in Temple City, and I was like, literally, he names the restaurant, and I'm driving right by it, and I was like, oh, fuck. Well, I'm going to get my haircut, and I'm going to eat this shit for lunch.
Yes.
And it was like these, like, crispy chili, like, crab and shrimp, and I was dying. It was so good.
I bet. Do you remember what the restaurant was
no,
called?
No, I don't. I don't.
Oh, what a tease you I are. Know, I'm my the goodness.
Worst. I don't. I'm not good with remembering like a lot of names.
All right. Yeah. Fine. Fair enough. So, in 1996, Din Tai Fung opened its first non-Taiwan location, and they opened it in Japan. This is something that we could. Would probably take a whole other episode to go into about how even though Japan conquered Taiwan and were really not cool to the native people there, there's such a huge cultural overlap there because so many Japanese people lived in Taiwan for so long that they still appreciate each other's stuff. Mm-hmm. So a lot of Japanese people really like Taiwanese food and Taiwanese restaurants do well in Japan. And also apparently, I've never been to Taiwan, but apparently Japanese people go nuts for the original Din Tai Fung location. I mean, my understanding is that everyone does.
I mean, the original of everything. It's like everyone gets insane about it.
That's very true.
Like the original halal guys.
Oh my God, I know.
But it's so funny. There's like those three carts. They're all in that one plaza and they all line up to this one cart. And I'm like, you know it's the same thing, right, guys?
And they're like, shut up, shut
this
up.
This is the original one. And I was like, these carts get moved every day. How do you know that's the original one? It could be that one. It could be that one. You don't know.
I feel like you're bringing way too much logic into the conversation.
It would get me really upset because I'm kind of just like, why are you waiting? You're waiting 20 minutes for something that can take you 2 minutes to get.
Yeah, I know. Like,
New York, you're supposed to like, oh, we're in a hurry all the time.
Yeah, I don't like waiting in line for food, but I mean, your brother's restaurant is kind of the king of lines, so should we not talk shit about lines?
No longer. That is now Howlin' Ray's territory.
Okay. Yeah, Howlin' Ray's does have longer lines.
Howlin' Ray's has taken, like, the crown of the long line.
Yeah.
During, the month of December, they're, like, the longest people waited was, like, 4 hours. Like, literally, they opened, and the people at the end of the line were the people going in by the time they, like, closed down.
Would you wait 4 hours in line for fried chicken?
No, but I would wait 45 minutes. That is okay. My threshold.
Okay. That seems minutes. More reasonable. Yeah. But Egg Slut still does have long lines.
Hell yeah.
I imagine, I mean, I don't know if you guys keep tabs on these kind of things, but I feel like they're in like all the Rough Guides and Lonely Planets and all that. Like they're in all the guidebooks.
That's awesome.
Well, right? You like, you... I don't believe that your family isn't, like, checking.
My family, my parents especially, are, like, very humble people. And they teach you always be humble. Keep quiet. Like, keep yourself. I mean, I am, like, a personality.
Uh-huh.
But, I mean, I don't, like, Google myself or anything. Or, like,
that's probably for the best. Like,
Google Egg Slut.
Right. You know?
Like, I don't want... Yeah. My brother's also very much just, like, this is what I used to do.
Uh-huh.
My partners are doing all that stuff now. And I'm, like... focusing on new projects.
Yeah, he's more like a restaurant owner rather than a chef now these days, right? Yeah.
Trying to, because as my brother told me a long time ago, like this is like 3 years ago, he's just like, I do not want to die cooking eggs all day long. I was like, that makes perfect sense.
It's an honorable profession, though.
Very honorable. But creatives don't want to just do one thing.
Yeah. They get all antsy in the head, don't they?
I'm that way, too.
Yeah. And you got to try something new. Mm-hmm. Are you going to ever not work with wine?
I don't know. I really have no idea. I'm 26.
Oh, my God. You're a baby.
I'm a baby.
Get out of here.
And it's
what
like,
are you doing being 26 years old?
I got my first som job when I was 22, 23.
Oh, my God.
And so I was like, I mean, this is just. I just happen to love wine because every day you can learn something new and I love learning. So it's like, aww. This is kind of like the perfect thing at the moment.
Did you go to college?
Yeah, I went to the Culinary Institute.
Oh, right. You mentioned that. Yes.
Yeah.
Okay. So you know how to cook too.
Yeah.
Do you ever practice that?
Oh, yeah. I cook all the time at home. Like literally at the moment I have in the oven some tomato sauce at the house on very low heat.
I know. Are we safe here? Are you safe?
We're good.
Okay, good. So Din Tai Fung it's not fast food, but it's like quick service. Yeah. Like it's not like a relaxed evening out.
That's a lot. For me, this is like the beautiful part of a lot of Chinese food that I've had in my life, especially mm-hmm. in the Sangamo Valley, mm-hmm. is that it comes out so fast. Uh-huh. It is so fast. This one time, I literally went to Din Tai Fung with my family. Uh-huh. My brother and I put a timer on the table. And I was like, let's see how long it takes for the first thing to come out. Literally 2 minutes. Like, it was like just the pickled cucumbers. But still, I was like, this is fast.
Yeah.
This is amazing.
That's ridiculously fast.
This plate, get them out. Get it out.
Yeah. Oh my gosh. So even though it's fast as hell and brightly lit and family friendly, the New York Times named it one of the top 10 gourmet restaurants in the world in 1993.
Wow.
And that's really when the international hubbub began. And
that's cool.
In a way, I'm kind of like retroactively proud of the New York Times for doing that because they've gotten a lot more myopic lately. But it's cool that 20 years ago they found something cool in Taiwan. They should get back to that.
I think so too.
This is my really rude way of trying to get a job there. I don't think it's gonna work. So some of the Din Tai Fungs are owned by the parent company mm-hmm. and some are franchises. So like here in LA, there was that really ratty one mm-hmm. that existed for a very long time.
On Baldwin.
Mm-hmm. Yep. And then that one's completely shut down now,
that
right?
That one's gone. They're now at the Westfield, which is like 5 blocks away from there.
Right, right. So it's kind of fancier because Westfield malls are kind of fancy now.
Yeah, so weird.
Right. But I mean, that is one of the best food courts in America.
Yeah.
I think.
I mean, it's just weird to think that because when I was 16 going there having nothing to do, I was like, oh, cool, Johnny Rockets.
Yeah.
Now it's like, oh, yeah, you know, you want Side Chick or Din Tai Fung mm-hmm. or all the fancy food. It's kind of cool.
And there's a couple restaurants there that are from China, and it's the first U.S. location of those chains.
Makes perfect sense.
Like Hai Di Lao and Meizhou Dongpo. I think that's really interesting and says so much about immigration mm-hmm. to California and all that kind of stuff. Yeah. I think it's very cool. And I love that it's a stupid, dumb mall and it has some of the best Chinese food.
I mean, where Din Tai Fung goes, follow.
Yes, that makes seems like a smart sense. Thing.
Yeah.
So that one is owned by the company, but then there's the one in the mall in Glendale, and that's a franchise.
Mm-hmm. Fascinating.
But they seem to be able to serve the exact same
super consistent
food. Yeah, because there's a central kitchen in Taiwan, which I can't imagine that they're sending like all the perfectly sliced everything to their international locations.
Right.
But they've really got it down to a science. Each xiaolongbao has to have 18 pleats.
18.
18 pleats.
Jesus Christ, that's hardcore.
So I would like everyone to count them next time you go and let us know if there's one that has 17 or 19 pleats. And if so, throw the whole steamer basket.
Yelp review.
Outrage.
Just like the worst Yelp reviews. Like 1 star. I had only 15 pleats. This is bullshit.
Yeah. I demand my money back. Also, each dumpling is meant to weigh 21 grams before steaming.
Wow.
18 pleats, 21 grams.
That's amazing to me.
I know. And I
love consistency. That stuff gets me super excited.
Really?
Yeah.
That's so much quality control. It's really amazing. I mean, good for them. People really like it.
Yeah.
And again, it's amazing. And it's not like I don't have any particular loyalty to Din Tai Fung or whatever. I just want everyone to understand how good xiaolongbao are.
It's just the perfect dish.
Yeah.
It's soup. It's pasta. It's meat.
I love that you put that kind of like Italian spin on it because I'd never thought of that.
It's amazing.
It is amazing. If you've had it before, take someone who's never been before and warn them to like let it cool down a little bit. But like seriously watch their face while they're eating it. Because I remember my boyfriend at the time introducing him to it. And like he had this like look of wonder like he had seen Jeebus for the first time.
I mean, it makes perfect sense. It's just, it's such a, it's like a foreign thing, but then it's a comforting thing at the same time, mm-hmm. which is why I love it so much.
Yeah.
And that's really there's literally a year, like when I came back from culinary school and I was just working at this pizzeria and I was like looking for a fancier job in mm-hmm. a kitchen somewhere. And I just drove around the San Gabriel Valley, like finding soup dumplings, looking for it just for fun.
I like your kind of fun.
Yeah.
That's awesome.
Professional fatty. Yeah.
Oh my God, please get a business card that says that. That would be so amazing.
That'd be really cool.
There's Din Tai Fung's in New York, right?
I don't know, actually.
I actually don't know either.
I don't think so.
Because Joe Shanghai has the lockdown on it.
Joe Shanghai is amazing.
It is.
And then there's Flushing as well.
Right, and Flushing, Queens is the San Gabriel Valley of New York City.
But way smaller and not as impressive.
Oh, really?
I mean, there's a lot of good food in Flushing, but in terms of the diversity you get here, it's just, there's no question.
See, I like that. I like anytime LA can feel superior over New York.
Oh, Asian food. We have Asian food, Latin food. Mm-hmm. We have that on lock.
For sure. For sure.
That is like one of the biggest points of pride.
Yeah.
About being from Los Angeles.
But the good thing is that like, whereas New York gets all uptight about what they have and don't have, in LA, we're just like, oh, it's so dope that we have this stuff. Yeah. Yeah. Come get in on it, man. You'll love it.
We're just like, bring everybody here. It's super chill, bro.
Yes. And we fucking mean it when we talk that way.
And we get super excited.
Yes. I do love it. I don't mean for this episode to be like an LA appreciation episode, but whatever.
Well, we should appreciate it.
It's a cool city.
It's one of the best food cities in the world.
I know. If not the best right now. Bold claim, I know. But
I think, yes.
It's dynamic.
Way more. I mean, we have the most dynamic food scene.
Period. Yeah. Everyone, I feel like it's just standard personality type in LA is willing to try anything.
Yeah.
Yeah. Very open and experimental. Having said all this, you're moving to New York.
This is true.
Like some kind of idiot.
Well, you know, I mean, I've lived here almost my entire life.
Uh-huh.
And an opportunity came up.
Mm-hmm. One that you're not going to tell us.
I can't say yet.
Are we going to find out with a big splash in a couple months?
Yeah.
Okay.
But I'm going to, like, an opportunity came and I get the opportunity to move to New York, live in Manhattan. Mm-hmm. I am going to take that opportunity.
Fair.
Yeah.
Fair.
And I'd love to live somewhere new.
Yeah.
I did not think that would be New York City. I always saw myself either living in like Hong Kong, Tokyo or... Mm-hmm. Montreal or Paris. I thought like if I was going to leave Los Angeles, I'm going to leave the country.
Okay.
But, you know, timing's a crazy thing.
It is.
Yeah.
And as discovered earlier, you're a literal baby. So you have time to move to all those other places.
This is for me. This is what's happening.
Yeah.
I just came back yesterday.
Mm-hmm.
And I was at 10 Bells in New York City.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, in like the Bowery area. And I was sitting in this bar, and my friend, I met this guy about a year ago, and he became one of my very good friends in New York very quickly. And he was like, dude, you are going to love it here. Let me destroy you. Said, what do you mean? Closed down the bar, and he took really good care of me, and we just like drank and smoked cigarettes and drank so much.
Aww.
And it was just, it felt like home.
Oh, that's good.
So already, like, I have a very good feeling about this move.
Good.
I mean, you know, I have the biggest sense of pride for Los Angeles, but, you know, I just want to try something new.
Just chill out on the cigarettes, though.
I know.
That's my
it happens.
Only... I'm 9 years older than you, so you have to listen to me.
I'm going to listen.
Okay,
but good. Also, New York is like Paris to me. And so it just becomes, like, super, oh, yeah, what's up, dude? And your trench coat and scarf and hello, how are you? You have accent too.
Just get a vape pen instead.
Ugh.
I know. But you don't want to ruin your taste buds. Your whole job is knowing how to taste things.
Some of the best French winemakers all smoke cigarettes.
Oh my goodness.
I hope my mom doesn't listen to this.
I hope she does, though. She needs to get on your case about it. Anthony, thank you so much for joining us on Smart Mouth today. And good luck in New York, although, of course, we're sorry to lose you. But everyone should follow your Instagram because there are so many hilarious pictures of you, like I said, just like going nuts and living life. And it's actually really inspirational.
Oh, thank you.
So what's your Instagram handle?
At Anthony Kailan.
Awesome.
Yeah.
Thank you so much.
Thank you. It was a pleasure.
Bye.